Let's go to page 39. We have the blonde, so now we're going to get the Persian. I arrive at my former apartment. There I see a dark-skinned man in whom I recognize the Persian. He's putting objects into the house through the window. I make out a circular piece of wood and several letters. Then he approaches me in a friendly manner, and I begin a conversation with him. I, you are not allowed to study. He, no, therefore I study in secret. I, what subject are you studying? He, yourself. I, you speak to me in a very sharp voice. He, I speak as someone to whom everything else is forbidden. I, are you my shadow? He, I am between you and the light, so you are my shadow, not the reverse. Do you study physics? He, there your language is too difficult for me, but in my language you do not understand physics. I, what are you doing here? He, I am here to help you. You must give up a few illusions. For example, you believe that you have several women, but in reality you have only one. A moment ago I looked through the window and saw that you had no chair in your study. But if you had said that to me, I could have smuggled a chair into your room today. But now I have to fetch one. I will hurry. He disappears and I enter the apartment. Well, we're back to the Persian, who we've talked about, I felt, as related to Zarathustra, and about the need to reevaluate the relationship between spirit and matter. He, the author, says pretty much the same thing from a different point of view. One of the things Pali felt that the Persian represented was what he called neutral language. Let's see if I can make sense of that. I'll go. Pali, again, in an intuitive way, was looking how are physics and psychology going to merge. Well, he thinks they're going to merge by a language being developed that means something physical and something psychological at the same time. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But I do want to look at one of the examples he gave. For example, Pauli would say, now we're talking about the Persian, right, as representative of this new symbolic language, which the two domains. That the radioactive nucleus will become the new word for the self. So we won't have a word for self in psychology. We will have just the word radioactive nucleus, and that will mean self. This is where our thought is going. But think about that for a second.
Our thought.
Well, what's wrong with it? There's something horribly wrong with that way of thinking, and it shows you Pali's problem.
The science. It has to be a science level.
Well, I think, right. One thing, it coincidentally just happens to be a scientific term.
There's no feeling.
Where is the feeling missing?
You mean that in that term? What part of the term?
What is wrong by using radioactive nucleus to refer to the self? Exactly.
And also it's without consciousness in a way the radioactivity is.
You know, I think he might say, well, there is a consciousness in there somehow.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
You could stretch the point. But what I wanted to leave you with is how Pauli's feeling function doesn't work. Radioactivity kills people. The self builds them up. Now, you could say that the radioactive nucleus is an analogy for the self under one very special condition, when you're phony. And then the self tries to kill you. But,
Well, I was just thinking to mention another possibility.
Yeah, go ahead.
The radioactive nucleus disintegrates to a more stable nucleus.
Yep.
Is that what you're trying to achieve with the cell phone structure?
Not exactly. Because it doesn't disintegrate, it integrates into a more stable position. Now, we're going to see down the road that Jung doesn't want to mess with this stuff with Pauli. And I think that's why. And Pauli gets really mad. And that's one of the reasons Pauli would say he broke off contact with Jung. Because Jung would not discuss this stuff with him.
What, the neutral language? Jung didn't want to discuss it?
No.
Pauli is probably, I don't know about the historical
What I miss is the feeling reaction. Let's suppose you have a dream of radioactivity. You're probably not going to give it a positive meaning. You're going to say, where is something falling apart in my life that's having a potentially dangerous effect on me and those around me?
Well, it's positive. I don't know about the time in his life, and it is that that was associated with the discovery of the neutrino, right?
Let's see, when was his discovery of the neutrino? No, let me see. His discovery of the neutrino would have been...
The 30s?
In the 30s, early 30s.
Well, I mean, it was after, so to speak, for
32.
When his scientist
didn't. But you see, well, my point, that he's not evaluating the image correctly. He's making an intellectual analogy, which works intellectually, but it doesn't work on the feeling level. So one more example of how we have to be careful of his own interpretations. But just to go back to the Persian, what do you think that's about?
Well, when it says the chair, you know, he doesn't have a chair, so he's really not, foundation-wise and...
It's not on the ground.
Word, you know, yeah.
But there's another meaning to that, which I don't think the author picks up.
Is he the chair of the department?
Yeah,
chair?
Yeah. He was the chair of the... in all European professorships, they are said to have a chair. Mm-hmm. A chair of physics. I think he was the only chair of physics. Chair of physics, chair of psychology, chair of that. So I would take that to mean also that he is being asked to deliver a new message in his role as chair of the physics department. But that new role wasn't there yet. And I think somebody asked me, Nancy I think it was, asked me, you know, are his dreams asking something specific of him? Yes. And I think that's really the first image we have, that he is to form a new chair of physics, not literally, but metaphorically, to begin to present a new point of view from his position of a professor at the university.
Well, I would think the first one would be when the Persian wanted to get into the university in the first place, and he wasn't. Didn't you have that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of saying the same thing.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing. Yeah. We didn't see the dream of the Persian wanting to get into the university, but Pauli told us there was such a dream. Then we saw the dream of the Persian in the flood. And here, that fell OOD. And here we have the Persian coming back, wanting to get into Pauli's life, wanting to affect affect the kind of teaching he did at the university. It was that specific, I think. And in the area of what the Persian represents, namely this bridge between spirit and matter. And why is it the Persian and not the blonde?
It's not
integrated in that consciousness?
Nope. Well, that's true, but it's not why it's one, not the other.
You go to the shadow.
Well, because of the dark. We had the dark woman and the dark Persian. It has to do with his love life, I think. He is being asked not only to do this theoretically, but also personally. To talk about the issue of matter and spirit from his chair of physics at the university, and to live it in his own personal life. We don't yet see how that will be lived, but we will shortly when von Franz comes on the scene.
I have a question. When it said the round table, which that also is wholeness, isn't it? The circle of the idea, and that if he would follow this, I mean, was that a symbolism in there for that?
Okay. Yes, yes, I do think so.
And the Persian is putting objects into the house through the window, and when you look up what window means, it has to do with spirit.
Yeah, a view of the wind.
Right.
So that's the spirit coming in, but in its dark dimension. Dark meaning his sexuality.
Carrie, what about this whole thing about him saying, "And I am between you and the light, and you are my shadow, not the reverse"? I'm confused.
Well, it isn't. It's not so easy. I think the first thing it's meant to humble Pali. The Persian would be the bridge between the ego and the self, you might say. And in that sense, Pali is merely a reflection of another reality. And he is being asked to understand that. The other little detail is the letters, several letters, is that there is a message that Pali is to convey.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
What do you think of, for example, you believe that you have several ones, but in reality you have only one?
Well, remember we had the dream of the prostitute who was asking him to write an essay? That behind his roving eye was an unfulfilled creative task. That's the one woman. The inner anima who wants him to deliver a particular message. And he, not doing that, experiences that anima as erotic fascination. But that's only the spillover of her energy once her creative intent is ignored.
So that when the person doesn't react positively towards the animal, then that animal can't split up into the different types of images, and then there is a need for integration.
I would say not can. Always will. I think that's one of the reasons we are such a sex-obsessed society. The anima is not given recognition, and she spills over into all sorts of apparent desirousness. But behind that desire isn't unfulfilled sexuality, it's unfulfilled creativity.
Is that also like the way Jung was stepping up? I think the problem in the Zoroastrianism was that when a person kind of doesn't go his road, I guess, that is given to him, that he will be taken down by any means necessary.
Yeah, and boy, the great way to take a man down is through his, you know what? That's what, look at what breaks men who are flying high. They have a fair with a bimbo and get caught, and there goes their career. That sex thing just gets in and levels them. And they think they're after sex, but they're really being assaulted by an anima who's using what she knows will bring down an inflated ego. I think, you know, Pauly, I don't know what sort of relationship he had with other women. As I said, I don't think he had much of a fire relationship with his wife. But I think he struggled to remain true, at least. I don't know how he actually behaved, but...
So, also a formal question.
Yeah.
So then these different images of the animals then can get projected onto real people. Mm-hmm. That would...
I think that's the one way that the anima can take her revenge, is through sexual fantasy.
How about power and greed? It seems like a lot of people are being male and being brought down today through that. Well.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, I think you're right. Mm-hmm. But I think that's her again too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would agree, but I think that's another mm-hmm. way she can.
But in a roundabout way.
Yeah.
But that's related to sex, because it is said, I assume it's true, that women are mafia men with power and their money, mm-hmm. which you get by greed. Mm-hmm.
Would Henry Kissinger say power is the ultimate aphrodisiac?
Well, then it's Rambo. First you get the money, then you get the power, then you get the girl. I didn't say Rambo said it. But one thing I wanted to say to Patty, what is interesting, if you watch men like that, who are going after and being driven by greed at the expense of their relationships, their family, anything that's really dear to them, they dream of being seduced by a woman.
Mm-hmm. Dream of things to do, huh?
They dream of being seduced by a woman.
Oh.
They may be being seduced by money and power, but in the dream life they're being seduced by the woman. Hmm. And they'll say, oh, look at this wonderful experience I'm embarking on. And I can just say, oh, you poor bastard.
It seems like the anima would use whatever would entice the person. I mean, with one person it might be sex, and with another it
yeah.
would be greed.
Yeah.
It would still be seen as that. As an anima figure, but it would be used at the discretion of the anima as to what are you going to, you know, how am I going to take you down?
Yeah.
And it seems like it all gets intermingled to me. Like you take Donald Trump, and you know that his ex-wife, or however many ago, you know that was his symbol of power. She was his symbol of power, and also greed. I mean, because then he could get this
flaunter sort of.
That's his trophy. So it seems like they're all kind of at some level.
Yeah.
They get mixed up like that.
Well, that's the shadow. Mm-hmm. And the anima is supporting it if she wants to bring him down. And just try to talk with him. It is impossible to get through.
Talk with him?
A guy who's possessed like that. You think, oh my God, you can't see this most obvious steamroller heading your way. And you'd have to wait. Let's see, I think that does 40. Oh, another thing that I liked on page 41. I thought it was pretty astute of the author. Remember, Pauli equated the Persian with his neutral language. But the Persian says, about halfway down the second paragraph, in my language, you do not understand physics. Obviously, quantum physics is much too complicated for the Persian.
Yeah.
He personifies a knowledge of nature completely different, of a completely different kind, and one which is completely unknown to Pauli. Thus, the Persian cannot simply be identified with Pauli's neutral language. Because the neutral language always uses the technical terms from atomic physics. Again, we see how the unconscious compensates the incorrect interpretations that we sometimes give it. The next paragraph, he just mentions what we talked about, the chair. He talks about it a little bit more as being grounded. He talks about the Persian as coming from 1001 nights, where Eros is more cultivated than in the West. That could be, I thought it was more than that, and that's why I brought in Zarathustra. And it's a little hard, I know it's probably offensive to people today, considering what we're going through historically, but I think the validity in this statement about Eros, and Jung said the same thing, that he thought religion was a religion of Eros. And you might say, what? But again, if you think of the greatest poet of Eros being Rumi, as its essential nature, Islam may have a more differentiated Eros. Not in the way it's being lived, but just like the essential nature of Christianity and the nature of Christendom are different, so the essential nature of Islam and the nature of Islamic fundamentalism are different. But that doesn't mean that within the tradition itself, Eros can't be very highly developed, in the best sense. But take your pick, who knows? But the next paragraph is something I'd just like to linger on for a second. The dream. The dream of the Persian brings to the fore two problems which at first appear to have no connection with each other. The problem of acknowledging a new dimension of reality, and the problem of dealing with love relationships outside the marriage bond. Do you understand why he says that? We've alluded to it several times. So we're going to be following a dual approach here, looking at the meaning of Pauli's struggles for science and the meaning of Pauli for the meaning of Pauli's struggles with science for the development of his own Eros. And why that? Well, a couple of reasons. One, because he's going to have to get his spirit and matter together. In other words, his love and his lust together. But I think more importantly, and this is the, what should I say, the mystery or the beauty or the kind of the awesome nature of people like Pauli, is that they can't do it alone. No one can do this alone. And the woman he needs to do this will appear. So we can't just look at his mental development. We've got to look at his whole being as it's being challenged by this process. He needs somebody to talk these ideas through with. And there are probably like 10 women in the world who could do that. Maybe less at that time. But von Franz was one of them. With an enormously brilliant mind and appreciation for both science and Jung, of course. But The blonde personifies the insight, so that Pally is able to recognize intellectually. We talked about that. After the Inquisition dream, Pally immersed himself in intellectual work, namely in his studies of Kepler and Flood. That is an important step forward. And to skip a bit, at the same time, the danger is present that the realization of the new way stays stuck at the intellectual level. That's why I mentioned that bit about his misinterpretation of radioactive nucleus. Now, something we talked about earlier. The Persian at the bottom of the page obviously has to do with the further realization that will lead to a committed natural science. Committed meaning that he begins to experience the transformation in his own personality that he is attempting to understand in the external development of a scientific worldview. Yeah, several women would not be an adequate solution to the anima problem.
There's reference to this, I guess that's the general meaning.
Benedienst.
Yeah. What does that mean?
The tradition of courtly love.
So how does that relate?
That he is to serve the feminine?
Service of woman and the service of love, I have noticed.
Service of woman and service of, you know, the troubadours who picked a lady and went off and did deeds for her.
And more like it's not, it was not his wife.
And
she was usually married.
Yeah,
married.
Right.
Because it was held that since there were arranged marriages and stuff, the only kind of love there could be of this pure sense would be outside of marriage.
Now, how would
this
relate
to, I didn't say it.
To the problem that he has and trying to have a more committed.
That's a very good question. Let's go back to that period of history. It's the first period in history, I think it's safe to say, where you have the emergence of romantic love. See, there was no romantic love as we understand it prior to what? The 14th century, 13th century. So the knights' service to their lady, which was, I guess, in theory, Platonic, although I don't think in practice it was Platonic, but the tradition was that a knight would serve a lady and establish his honor through his service to her. And Emma Jung and von Franz talk about that in the Grail legend, is that's the emergence, that's the first emergence of the anima. That a guy does something for the feminine that involves risk and not primarily sexually motivated. It's done for the relationship. A whole new level of consciousness is emerging where a man does something for the relationship, not for the instinctual gratification necessarily. So in our language, it's the beginning of the service to the anima. Now we take that inside, that what the man has to do is feel what his anima wants him to do and then do it, like write that essay. But given the fact that nature isn't split like we think it is, when he's doing that inwardly, often just the woman who is analogous to the inner challenge appears outside. And he's probably going to get erotically fascinated by her. And what he has to do is stay true to that desire for her. Because staying true to that desire for her and what she asks of him is at the same time staying true to his inner anima and what she's asking of him. And that's the Benedienst. Service of love.
So, are you in relation? The critique is on his science, that it's not committed.
Yep.
So, How is that?
Well, Von Franz will be the woman who appears. And what she wants is a relationship in which I think she probably would have gone either way, a sexual or a non-sexual relationship. But I think she was able to stand having a sex attraction to somebody and not sleeping with him. And that was what was being asked of him, to develop that sort of a friendship with her. Live with that passion for each other and actually have that passion be part of things that pull them together, but for the purpose of discussing and publishing on this issue.
So for the science, would that mean then that you have this passion for science, but not for any ego reasons, just for the purity of science?
Well, yes and no. You really have the passion for another human being.
Well, I understand that, but the term here is used uncommitted, committed natural science.
Yeah, you have the attraction to another human being, but the fruit of that attraction is creative work together, which is addressing these problems in science that we've been talking about. So you could say, if you step back from it, that yes, the love feelings are meant to develop science, but that's not exactly why you do it. You do it because you're so fascinated with this person. And then the nature of what you're fascinated about with respect to each other is this mutual interest you share. And in working on that mutual interest, you generate a new creative product, which in this case would be the solution to that scientific problem.
That would be a committed...
That would be a committed science.
Yeah.
Right.
Carrie, I don't want to belabor the point, but I'm just wondering, too, that the expression of natural science as opposed to what?
Oh, that's just...
There shouldn't be a distinction there. Okay, that's what I was trying to understand.
No, in German it's all the same, and that's one thing I got to kind of try to figure out the translation. They say Naturwissenschaft. But that would include chemistry, physics, biology. Psychology would not be Naturwissenschaft. Anything that we would call the hard sciences.
So, getting back to what you were saying earlier, is it supposed that many of the what we know as scientific breakthroughs may have come from some kind of collaborative, passionate kind of relationship and so on?
I don't know. I think not.
I know.
Because, you see, what we're dealing with here is creativity that is intended by the self. Was the previous development in science intended by the self? I don't know. I would tend to say not. That was the ego. But as we shift the motivation for what we do in the world toward the self, then this is what we have to start dealing with. You think, oh, serve the self, tra-la-la-la-la, doesn't that sound nice? And you're right in the fire, because that's the way the self works. Your original question was, you know, do you do this for the committed science? If you step back from it, you can say, oh yeah, that was the result. And in a way, you're right. The anima was working for the evolution of consciousness through your sexuality. And for the production of a new creation of a depth and historical relevance that suits where we are in this moment in time. Does that
make sense?
Okay. It's very important. It's like Pauli was a knight in the Middle Ages, and here's Guinevere, except her name happens to be Mose. And he was to serve her in their working together on this project. That's why he says Menides. Really, he's to serve the anima through her. But you see that what hot water you get into when you try to do work that is this important. I think the other word for minute needs would be courtly love.
So if you take an analogy with Guinevere and Lancelot,
yeah,
that was the Lancelot idea.
I kind of forget the exact story.
That he said, you know, I will love you forever, and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
She's married and so forth.
Yeah. And did you see the one that's been about 2 months of Tristan and Isolde? You saw that movie, but he fights on behalf of the king for her. That's the whole Menendez thing. The guy fights for the woman.
So that we should try to develop that kind of relationship with our anima.
Yeah. If you can avoid it, do. But if you can't,
you have to first get rid of the harem.
You first have to get rid of the harem. Absolutely. That's what promiscuity snares you. Okay, can we go on? Synchronicity. November 6, 1948. Pally had a conversation with Jung concerning synchronicity. What we're getting into now is that Pally's conversation with Jung began to give Jung the courage to write about it. So here we're seeing the positive side of Pally's effect. A little bit of the history of synchronicity. See, this is 1948. Now, as far as I know, the first place Jung talks about synchronicity, but he does not use the word, if I recall correctly, is in the Dream Analysis Seminar. And that's 1928. He just talks about the concept. In 1930, he refers to it in his essay, not his essay, his memorial address to Richard Wilhelm, by name. But then he dropped it. He did not pick it up for 18 years. And one of the meanings of Pally for Jung's life is that Pally got Jung interested in writing about this. Jung wrote, quite a while ago, you encouraged me to write down my thoughts on synchronicity. I finally managed to get around to it and more or less collect my thoughts on the subject. I would be most grateful if you would be kind enough to cast a critical eye over it, covered as it is with question marks. Nowadays, physicists are the only people who are paying serious attention to such ideas. It would be an interesting thesis for somebody in Zurich. I'm pretty sure there are many versions of the synchronicity article, and that after each version, Pally commented, and then Jung rewrote. So it'd be interesting to see how Jung developed his ideas out of the comments of Pally. But anyway, by the time that thing got published, Pally had made quite a few comments on it. What is important now to go back to Pally is after this discussion, the split between the Persian and the blonde stops, and we get a new figure called the stranger. So apparently that discussion had a great deal of meaning for Pally as well. And I'm sure Jung put it to him that this journey is both mental and physiological. And that will show up in these dreams, where dream figure changes from the Persian or the blonde into the stranger. And we're going to see that in the very next dream, which occurred about 2 weeks after Jung and Pally talked about synchronicity. By the way, just an aside, real quick, not to get you too confused, but the very top line there, Pally's essay on background physics.
Where are you?
Top of 43. it's discussed in his essay on background physics. This is just in a parentheses. We'll talk about that at the end of the course. It's a little essay Pally wrote in which he took some of his dreams of physics and tried to show their symbolic background. But they don't exactly fit into this thread, so we'll get to those later. But just so you know, when we were discussing the dream of Kirchhoff and Flood, that would be what Pally would say, an attempt to create a background physics, the archetypal dimension of these physical theories. But let's look at the dream now that Pally had after talking with Jung about synchronicity. I see a river which flows from south to north, as does the Rhine. A dark man goes into the river and is swallowed up by it. In this moment, the mother appears, only similar in features to my personal mother, and asks me what colors I have chosen. I respond by saying I have chosen black, white. Immediately a hexagram appears with black and white stripes on a piece of paper, and the mother disappears. We'll look at the diagram in a second. Now a man with blonde hair comes. Excuse me. A gush of air blows the piece of paper into his face, so that the stripe pattern remains marked on his nose. Remember, we saw that before. Dream 7. Next, the man with the striped nose is startled as he observed three pieces of wood on the ground. He reflects a moment and then appears to understand something and extends his hand out over the river. Immediately, a man comes out of the river. He has black hair but a face bathed in light, with characteristics of the Persian, the blonde, and the shadow. So he'll be the stranger. At that, the man with a striped nose says to the other, "Do you know that you have lived before?" The one who came out of the river says, "No." The first says, "Everyone was shocked when you went into the river. But I noticed your post-mortal effects. For example, these three pieces of wood here. This gave me the certainty that you only appeared to be dead." Then the man answered, "Now I am beginning to remember something from before. The man with a striped nose disappeared as well as the three pieces of wood. The man with the dark hair and illuminated face who had come out of the river alone remained. He seemed to be very happy to be back on land again." Pally writes, it obviously has to do with a transformation of the archetype of the self as a result of the intervention of consciousness. The new form of the archetype corresponds to Mercurius in alchemy. Here he is a man who comes out of the river. Well, just to look at it very cursorily, that's the transformation of Pally's understanding of what synchronicity is. He is realizing that this spirit matter issue is not something to be done intellectually or physically, but is something that belongs to both domains. And that's somewhat an image of healing in his understanding of what is being asked of him, both to professionally and personally take the unity of matter and spirit seriously. Though there's a little warning, and I think the author did a good and interesting commentary, an important commentary. Here Pally's assessment concerning the influence of consciousness appears false to me. In the dream, Pally is for the most part an observer. He doesn't engage the self. It can be, though, that synchronicity, that Jung's synchronicity hypothesis touched him so deeply that it gave rise to this reaction from the unconscious. We're just about out of time, but we might just take a moment and anticipate, how is that going to be a problem that he is just an observer?
Does his tendency to analyze
his experience? Yeah, in one way to put it, that he'll forget what he just learned. It'll be a passing awareness, but it won't stick. Still, we can observe from the point of view of the unconscious how it is trying to bridge these two sides of knowledge.
Do we have time to just raise a question of what is this figure in the dream of dream coming back to life?
We're going to go this route carefully. I just wanted to get the main idea first. We'll spend a good bit of time on this next week. Yeah, we'll look at all of the details. I just wanted to get us going. You still following it so far? It's demanding, isn't it? I got to tell you, I do listen to this. And I can only take about 20 minutes of myself at a time. I am exhausted after listening for 20 minutes. So hang in there. If it gets too much, holler. But I feel it's interesting, but I do know how demanding it is. So we're up to 44. Up to 44 after the first paragraph, we'll pick up there. We'll go through the stream again. I think you can see it's pretty important. Looking at all the details, I just wanted to get us started on it. So what did we get through today? We only got through seven pages. Any questions?
Yeah, that idea of insight to consciousness, new consciousness, new insight not sticking, is that a picture of, or that happens at the beginning until it gets continuous.
Yeah, right. That is not untypical for the first understanding of something, that it comes and you understand it at the moment, but then you go home and you lose it. And you get it again. Yeah.
And so for his situation, you're saying that maybe it's just, in some it doesn't ever solidify?
I don't think it ever really solidified in him, yeah.
Is it easy to tell whether or not you're an observer or you're part of the dream?
Well, just see if any of your actions are part of the dream. See, none of his actions are part of the dream. Everything is done by somebody else. Okay, see you in two.